30 years as an official, now evaluator, and oof, been a tough few weeks for CFL officials. But hey, well, who's had a worst few weeks, kickers or officials? It would be a tough one. I'd probably argue kickers, because the officials have got more right than they've had wrong, and there's a few kickers that have definitely had more misses than they've had made. As Bud Steen joins us, Steen, how you doing?
I am doing great, despite the gray skies. It's a great day out there. Feels like fall. Feels like playoffs coming.
Didn't you used to have like a perm, and the league forced you to get a haircut?
No, I had a perm back when I was doing flag football, and let's say it's one of those decisions that a guy might make, and then as soon as you've looked in the mirror, you go, "Oh my God, what was I thinking?" So I got it mowed off. Unfortunately, there is a picture that was in the yearbook for the Edmonton Flag Football League with Bud Steen, referee-in-chief, with big, Majot-like hair.
Mm, wow.
Yeah, it was happening, all right. But, no, I did. I caused some grief to the CFL.
Yeah, didn't the CFL come down on you once for your hair?
Yeah, the director gave me a call one day and said, Steen, and this was back before social media, he said, Steen, we get more letters about you than any single other issue that has occurred so far this season, so get your hair cut. So that was prompting enough. I ran down to my barber and got it mowed off. But, it wasn't mullet-like. I did have enough respect, but it was no doubt sticking out the bottom and kind of gracing way beyond the top of my collar. So it wasn't cop-like on the field.
Well, speaking of mullets, we actually just got a picture tweeted to us from Jeff about Zygmunt Palfy. Oh, my goodness. I just retweeted that one on Twitter. Wow. That is legit short on the sides, and he's rocking flow on the top and all the way down the back. It's pretty good. We got a few raw brown ones. Oh, I can't wait to see Brownie. Oh, man, this will be gold. Eskimo fans, and obviously it didn't cost them, because Winnipeg's kicker, well, he actually did make one kick, but he couldn't make four of the other ones. There was a call late in the game. The officials on the field didn't call pass interference. Winnipeg ends up challenging it, and Command Center decided Odell Willis indeed had pass interference. And a lot of people were left scratching their head on that call.
Interesting play altogether, because here we have Winnipeg challenging third down. They were obviously needing some points, and so they throw a pass in the middle of the field, and Command Center in the last 3 minutes reviews every play. On that one, they needed to determine whether or not the pass was complete or incomplete, and after some time, they made the decision that the Winnipeg receiver had not successfully caught the ball. It went to the ground. So the ruling then from Command Center was incomplete, yards not gained, first down Edmonton. At that point, coach for Winnipeg, O'Shea, throws his flag and challenges that there was, in fact, pass interference on the play. And I think we've already talked about Winnipeg, in order to do that, had to have a timeout in their pocket and a remaining challenge. They had both of those, so fine. Command Center now goes back and takes a long time to look at the play, and the decision from Toronto was that, in fact, Odell Willis had made contact prior to the ball arriving and ruled that there was pass interference on the play.
Now, you were watching the game. What was your thought when you saw the replay?
Well, I don't have the technology that Toronto has available to me. I'm watching it on TSN, and the angles that I saw on TSN was that there was not a lot of early contact. But I can say that every time a decision is made by the replay center, it is further reviewed in Toronto after the game. And so that's where this play is at right now.
So this play is under review, right?
Yes, yes,
so
it is.
I know the official from the game a few weeks ago against Winnipeg, I noticed he did not officiate any games this past weekend, so I don't know if that's just a coincidence or not, mm-hmm. but I was making sure to check the list, and I did not see his name, so right. I don't know if it's a self-imposed suspension from the league or not. But when a play is under review then from Command Center, is it this, like, is there an evaluator of Command Center similar to there's evaluator
yes.
of officials?
Yes.
There is.
Yes. The vice president of officiating, who ultimately is the employer of the gentleman that sit in that chair. And he evaluates their performance and will ultimately decide whether or not they work in the playoffs or whether they continue to work. It's that simple. We're always only as good as our last performance.
So there's different guys then running Command Center.
Yes.
Not the same person.
That's
obviously,
right.
It couldn't be the same person for every game.
That's right. We've got three different people who work in Command Center as the replay official.
Now, I want to talk about the game last night in Monday Night Football because, of course, people are all upset with the officials. Calvin Johnson, who was the one who fumbled the ball, afterwards said, hey, you don't put the game in the officials' hands. Good. He's true. Did the official make the wrong call? Yeah, clearly made the wrong call. But if Johnson doesn't fumble the ball, then it doesn't matter. If the Seattle defender knows the rules, he probably just doesn't punch it purposely out of bounds. So
right.
I want to talk about the rules and how they're different CFL to the NFL. In the CFL, had the defender punched that ball out, it's still their ball automatically, correct?
Okay, so let's set the play up for those that haven't been listening to the show. Detroit is running the ball into the Seahawks' goal, and at about, let's say, the half-yard line, a defender punches the ball out of the hands of the ball carrier. The ball goes into the Seahawks' goal area, and prior to the ball bouncing out past the dead ball line and out of bounds, a Seahawk player bats the ball out of bounds. He purposefully hits the ball out of bounds. In the NFL, as I understand the rules there, that ball should have returned to Detroit on the half-yard line because of the purposeful bat out of bounds. In the CFL, the fact that the ball was never in possession of either team in the goal area means that it's going to go back. It's treated as a fumble from the field of play. Notwithstanding that it is knocked away from the ball carrier, it's treated as a fumble from the field of play into the goal area without possession. So in the Canadian Football League, that ball would go back to Team A, back to the offense, at the point where the ball was last possessed. In this case, half-yard line, we rounded up to the one-yard line, and it would have been the offense's ball at the one-yard line, and the yards continue. So if they had gained sufficient yardage for a first down, they would have been first and goal, and if not, it would have been whatever, second or third and goal from that one-yard line.
If you punch the ball out of the end zone purposely, though, in the CFL, right, is it different rule than the NFL? No, it's the same.
Oh, is it a different rule than the NFL? Yeah, you can punch it out if you want. You're not in the CFL where
but it's not possession. Like
No. You do not give up your right to possess the ball. You've never had the right to possess the ball.
So that's the rule then in the NFL. They never really possess the ball. And even if it bounces out, you know, off of the defender's hand, if it wasn't purpose, which the officials deemed it, mm-hmm. I'm surprised they actually give the ball to the defending team when they really never had possession of the ball. Because it's not possession just by touching the ball. That's
right.
Not possession.
Yeah. Can't answer that.
Yeah.
I'm not a student of the NFL book. It's written, it's funny, at reading rule books, you get used to, obviously, what you're used to. And although our amateur rule book is about three times the size of our CFL rule book, the books have a similar format. And so the vice president of officials in the NFL actually gave me a copy of their book many years ago, and I started looking at it, but it was just so damn confusing because it just doesn't follow the flow of our rule book that I put it away because I was just getting confused.
So yours is one-third the size of theirs?
No, our professional book is about one-third the size of our amateur book.
Okay, now that makes no sense to me. Why would you expect amateur officials to have way more calls?
Because there's not more calls, there's more explanation. So the definitions are longer and they go into a lot of detail on kind of what-ifs, things that pro officials are expected to know inherently. Are described in detail.
What's a good
amateur,
example?
Amateur book. You know, It's been years since I've read it. What would be an example? Certainly, plays related to fumbles in and around the goal area are detailed in a lot of depth in the amateur book.
There was a few plays in the Eskimo game that I had a few questions as I was marking it down. So now I know in the hurry-up offense, one of the rules that's changed to give the offense a bigger advantage when they run it is it limits the defense from making changes because they would do that and they would run guys in a lot of times because it would slow them down. Plus, if guys were fatigued, they could get on and off the field.
Yeah, that's right. We call that tempo offense.
Yeah, so and all the Eskimos, all the offense has to do is tell the official we're in tempo offense, correct?
That's right. Most teams are using the quarterback to signal to the referee and he gives a kind of winding of a clock motion and that's enough. Now we're in tempo. The referee goes to his crew communication system, says tempo, 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 so everybody knows, and Team B, the defense, is not entitled to substitute on the play.
Now, the one thing I noticed was that in the Eskimo game, they were running tempo offense. They got the ball down to the 1 yard line, but the officials allowed Winnipeg's defenders to come in. Why?
Yeah, it was a little different. So that there was pass interference against the Edmonton receiver that occurred in the Winnipeg goal area. And Edmonton wanted to take advantage of the situation, obviously, because Winnipeg didn't have its big team in, knowing, of course, that the result of the penalty was going to produce a first down on the 1 yard line. And so Edmonton declared tempo, but the referee correctly allowed Winnipeg to substitute, to the chagrin, I would imagine, of the Eskimo coaching staff. He allowed Winnipeg to substitute some players and get their bigger personnel in to no avail because the play after, I believe, Edmonton punched the ball in for a touchdown. So it didn't help Winnipeg, but it didn't violate the spirit of the tempo rule that we introduced this year.
Okay, so when there's a penalty, that negates tempo, essentially.
Yes, essentially, that's correct.
Okay. Now, there's been a few other ones. We got a few texts. You can always text in your questions at 10, 12, 60. The Eskimos were called for offside on a play, and they showed the replay on television where the helmet was across, but the hands weren't. So is it the crown of the helmet then that the officials look for, not the hands?
It depends on the particular play, and appreciate that what you see on television is not what the official sees on the field of play. He is standing looking down the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, well, that one angle, it was Amondo Sewell who was offside, and they had the camera angle was right on the line of scrimmage because it was looking straight across at the official.
Okay, so again, it may or may not have been right on the line of scrimmage. It could have been even as much as a yard off is going to give you the wrong angle. But I don't want to sound too defensive for the official. What we generally look for on the usual plays from scrimmage, not short yardage plays, not plays from the 1 yard line. We're looking to see where the defensive player's body is. And so if the crown of his helmet happens to be invading the neutral zone, that is generally ignored. We're looking at placement of feet. We're looking at knees. We're looking at hands. On short yardage plays, so if it's third and one, or if it's first, second, or third down from the 1 yard line going in, we will allow nothing inside the neutral zone. So if a defender has a finger inside the neutral zone and it's seen by one of the line of scrimmage officials, that is a penalty and will be called.
And so on that case, like it clearly looked like because his head was leaning forward, right? And it was across the, the line.
Yes.
But his hands aren't. So if by the rule book, is it the helmet?
You cannot be. Anything.
No part of your body.
No part of your body can be in the neutral zone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it clearly was. And I was just curious because it's, in certain places, it's like when the ball crosses in your body and everything, I was wondering. So it's kind of like the ball crossing the line of crossing the goal line.
Yes.
Once it breaks the plane, it's in.
It's in. That's right.
Okay.
And also, It has to be all the way out. There was a play in the Saskatchewan BC game where I believe we had illegal contact on the defense, and the offense was trapped in their own goal area, and the quarterback, by the look that they showed, they didn't go to replay on it because of the penalty. The ball did not come completely out of the goal area, so it would be a safety touch. So if you're the offense and you've taken the ball back into your own goal, you have to get it all the way back into the field of play. Any piece of the ball touching the goal line, and it's a safety touch.
Hmm. All right. A few other ones were, you know, there were some calls on procedure. And we've got this text one. Can you ask Bud to explain procedure properly? Sometimes I see the old lineman moving and it's not called, and other times they are. What's the rule on what's allowed to move and what isn't?
That's very interesting, because I commented on one of my evaluations this weekend. The left tackle in this particular game began to shift his left knee. And because I can jog it, frame by frame, it's like millisecond by millisecond, I could see the man's knee move a couple of inches, and then the ball started moving. So by a strict reading of the rule book, that's procedure. By professional officiating...
Yeah, but you're watching it in
exactly, exactly. And I will say that the official flagged it for procedure. And my comment to him, and one of our old directors used to use this term, don't pick fly shit out of pepper. Yeah, he moved. Nobody on the defense reacted. You got a blowout of a football game. Leave it alone. He moved so slightly that it had no impact at all. So we will give discretion to the officials to make those sorts of judgments. You know, we jokingly say he just jiggled a bit of fat. What we're looking for is enough of a move. The right tackle for the Eskimos is very good. Chris Morris was another example. When his first move was like an explosion, and you had to be very careful, because if you weren't ready for it, you would just see this enormous flurry of body activity, assuming that he was early and calling it procedure. So you have to be very, very cautious. And again, the right tackle, current right tackle for the Eskimos, is extremely good. So if he's playing, say, 60 snaps or 50 snaps in a game, he is going to be absolute, his timing is going to be impeccable on 58 of them. And he might get us on a couple, or we might get him for a couple of his. But you will also, as an official, we're looking to see whether or not that movement caused anything to happen on the other side of the ball. You know, did the defense react in any way at all? Because there's no advantage to a millisecond of early movement.
No, and in a lot of cases, I'm sure that time where his knee's moving, you know, that millisecond of the 2 inches, it's not one that's allowing him to get it, because it's not like he's extending to suddenly get a better advantage
exactly,
for position.
Exactly. There's really no advantage gained by the offense on that little movement.
But as always, we appreciate it. We will talk to you next week. We could have the Stampeders pretty much clinching first place, or we could be down to the final few games, Esks and Stampeders tied for first place, which would be one of the few interesting races in the West anyway.
It's going to be a great weekend. Certainly looking forward
to
football.
And what about Henry Burris and the Ottawa Red Blacks? Burris set in the CFL record, 46 of 53. Best completion percentage ever, over 40 passes, where it was 89.4. He also had the most completions ever in a game, 46. 504 yards.
That's the Henry that those of us who love Henry love him for. There's another side of Hank, and we'll watch tonight with great interest to see which one comes out on the field tonight.
He and Ottawa has been, without a doubt, the surprise story for sure. And yes, a rare Tuesday CFL game and a rare home game for the Argos because they're basically getting kicked out of their building for the they might be kicked out of their building
forever.
The rest of the playoffs.
That might be it for them.
Yeah, this
forever.
Might be their last game. The way that if the Jays go deep in the playoffs,
correct.
It's very possible.
Yep, that's right. You know, the Jays, obviously, since their owner owns the building, they control the building. So, you know, Toronto Argonauts understand that. But, yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And Ottawa, surprise? I don't know. They did very well in this year's draft and in the offseason picking up free agents.
Yeah, tied for first place. Come on, no one thought they're 8-5 and going to finish first. There was not one prognosticator anywhere that thought Ottawa. They haven't won 10 games since 1978, my man.
I don't like prognosticating because that's not an official's business. But I can tell you I'm enjoying the run, and it's great for football in Ottawa. You know, we're hopefully going to start to see a little bit of rivalry starting to develop. Ottawa, Montreal. You know, we could have a Montreal crossover into the West. There's all kinds of things that could be happening now, and that's why you got to love the CFL, because it's not over till it's over.
I'm going to take BC to beat out Montreal. I think young Jennings is the quarterback is the reason that, you know, they're tied and BC owns that tiebreaker automatically because they're in the West. And Montreal has been floundering. I'm going to take the BC Lions to finish
30. I like the Lions, too. I really like Jennings. He looks like the real deal. As long as they stay away from those goofy trick plays that put him at risk.
He could have got lit up.
He could have got destroyed. You know, that was just football courtesy by that Saskatchewan DB on that play, because I figured he was going to get killed.